Hello, my name is Paul Weatherly, and this is an introduction to Chapter 6 on the social and cultural environment of business. In this chapter, what we emphasise is the interaction between business and the social and cultural environment, in the sense that business activity is both influenced by this environment, by the social and cultural setting in which it takes place, but also shapes that setting. So, for example, we can see that changes in the ideas about the role of women in society and concerns recently about the gender pay gap are issues which businesses have had to respond to. Or we might think about other areas of change in society, such as growing environmental concerns that businesses equally have to respond to, or consumer trends and tastes and how they change over time. But we can very clearly see the way in which the social and cultural environment is shaped by business activity directly and indirectly. The types of jobs that we do, the way work is organised, the balance between work and life, patterns of income inequality and class differences related to the jobs market. These are all ways in which the social environment is shaped by business. We can also think about the way business shapes the types of goods and services we consume and how we spend our leisure time. So we can see that there's this interaction between business and the social and cultural environment. It's not a one-way influence. Secondly, of course, the social and cultural environment is dynamic. It's characterized by processes of ongoing social and cultural change, again, partly driven by business activity. In this chapter, we look at three interrelated aspects of the social environment. These are demographic trends, emphasizing in the UK context a growing and aging population. Secondly, the chapter looks at immigration and cultural diversity in modern Britain. And thirdly, we look at the occupational order and the changing class structure. Firstly, then, we look at demographic trends and why these are important for business. In general terms, we might think about this in two ways. People are important for business as an economic resource. So we can look at demographic change in terms of its implications for the labour supply. And secondly, of course, people are consumers. So we can think about demographic change in terms of consumer patterns, for example, in relation to the changing age structure of the population and how that affects overall patterns of consumer demand. So here in this chapter, we look at Britain in terms of key demographic trends, particularly the growing and aging population. Growth of the population is a result of both natural change, i.e. the balance between births and deaths, and net migration, which is the difference between the number of people coming into the country and the number of people leaving the country. And in Britain, both of these factors contribute to population growth. We can also see that net migration contributes to changes both in the age structure of the population, because immigrants tend to be of working age, and also net migration, of course, contributes to the growth of the population overall. In looking at growth, the chapter notes that the UK has one of the highest rates of growth of all EU countries. So, for example, it's projected that over the 25-year period between 2014 and 2039, the population of the UK will increase by 14% compared to an EU average of 3%. In fact, during this period, this 25-year period, nearly half of the EU 28 member states will experience a decline in population. So growth of the population in the UK over the coming decades stands out against this European experience. So, what do we mean by an ageing population? An aging population refers to an increasing proportion of the elderly in the population. So this is conventionally measured in terms of the proportion of people who are post-retirement age, although of course retirement age itself is something which is shifting over time. So an aging population also changes the age structure, the balance between the elderly and those of working age or younger. An aging population is also reflected in, and therefore in, an increase in the average age of the population. Fundamentally, an aging population is due to people living longer, in other words, increased life expectancy, as a long-term trend in advanced societies. And this is due to a number of factors, such as improved living standards, people having healthier lifestyles, and improvements in public health and healthcare. So that's the underlying factor, is an increase in life expectancy. But an ageing population also reflects changes in the birth rate. So in particular, in the UK, an increase in the proportion of older people reflects the post-war baby boomer generation moving through the age structure into retirement. These were people who were born after the Second World War, between the late 1940s and early 1960s, and who are now entering into their retirement years. So increased life expectancy is a long-term trend. So for example, between 1841 and 2011, the average life expectancy at birth nearly doubled, from just over 42 years for females to nearly 83 years, and for men from just over 40 years to 79 years. And this long-term trend reflects, in the earlier part of the 20th century, mainly a decrease in infant and child mortality, and since the 1950s, particularly health improvements among the elderly. So what are the implications of an ageing population, and in particular for business? In the chapter, we look at these implications under three main headings. First of all, the implications for labour supply, and in particular, the balance between the population of working age and the non-working population, or in particular, what's often called an old age dependency ratio. So the implications for labour supply here depend on factors such as the retirement age, the age at which people retire, and of course upon opportunities for older people to work, which raises issues such as discrimination in the jobs market against older people. So one implication is around the labour supply. A second implication is to do with demand for pensions and public services. So in particular, the increased demand upon certain forms of public expenditure, pensions, health and social care. And thirdly, the third implication is to do with older people as consumers, or what's sometimes called the grey market. In the chapter, we look at the options for dealing with an older population, an ageing population, and consider the responsibilities of business for dealing with this change in our society. So here, although population ageing is clearly a good thing, people living longer is a desirable change in society, it also poses certain kinds of challenges in terms of the notion of increasing dependency. So this is the idea that older people are not working or therefore not contributing to current output, but of course they make demands upon the current output of the economy. So in the chapter, we look at the proposals and recommendations put forward by the Turner Commission, which looked at the implications of ageing, particularly for pensions. And this sets out roughly three broad options, which of course can also be combined. First of all is the idea that an ageing population will require higher taxes and national insurance contributions from the current working population to fund higher levels of public spending on pensions and other forms of public provision. Secondly is the idea that people will need to save during their working lives in order to finance their retirement through higher taxes again or through contributions to pension schemes. And thirdly is the idea of changing the retirement age so that people work longer and retire later. And this is a major focus of government policy in recent years to increase the retirement age for both men and women. These options, of course, raise questions about the responsibility of business for dealing with an aging population. So, for example, how far businesses should be responsible for ensuring decent pensions for their own employees through occupational schemes. Secondly, the extent to which the burden of increased taxation or national insurance contributions to finance state pensions should fall on businesses. And thirdly, the willingness of business to tackle age discrimination and afford opportunities for people to extend their working lives on a full or part-time basis and retire later. Moving on then to immigration. Immigration has created cultural or ethnic diversity in modern Britain, or what we often refer to as a multicultural society. And as mentioned before, it's also contributed to growth of the population, net migration being the difference between immigration and emigration. And it also alters the age structure of the population because immigrants tend to be of working age, a prime motivation for migration being to look for work. In the UK context, historically, net migration has mainly come from non-EU countries. But there's been increased net migration from other EU member states since 2004. So that net migration from EU and non-EU states has been roughly equal in recent years. Of course, this will be affected in coming years by Brexit. So, what are the implications of immigration for the UK? Broadly speaking, these fall into two areas, economic and cultural. Firstly, net migration has the effect of increasing the workforce and also altering the composition of the workforce in terms of the skills. And secondly, in cultural terms, immigration changes the cultural makeup of the society, creating a multicultural society with a diversity of values and lifestyles. Just as an indication of this, in 2011, the census shows that 14% of the population of England and Wales were non-white as a measure of ethnic diversity. And nearly 6% are white other than English, Welsh, Scots, Northern Irish and British. For example, being Irish or of European origin such as Polish migrants. One of the issues that we look at in the chapter is the question of whether members of ethnic minorities are afforded the same opportunities in life generally and in particular in business, in the jobs market. So we look at the evidence of ethnic penalties in the UK labour market. A number of ethnic minority groups, notably Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Black Caribbean and Black African men, experience higher unemployment rates, greater concentrations in routine and semi-routine work, and lower hourly earnings. The final part of the chapter looks at class in modern Britain as an important feature of the social environment. And most of us are very familiar with the idea of Britain as a class society or as a class divided society. The language of class and class differences is very familiar in Britain. Some people say that in Britain we have a heightened sense of class and class differences. In this chapter, we look at how class is defined and recognise that there are different conceptions of class, different definitions of class and the class structure, but we focus on two in particular. One is the idea that class is basically defined in terms of the distinction between employers and employees. So that in a capitalist economy, the most important class difference concerns those who work for a living and those who own and control business. A second conception of class focuses on occupation and sees class groupings in terms of the types of occupations that people do. Looking at this second conception of class in terms of the occupational order, we can look at how the class structure has changed over time. For example, over the long term, over the course of the 20th century. And here we see a change from an occupational structure heavily dominated by manual work, in which a majority of people were in manual jobs, often seen as working class jobs, to one where there's a fairly even division between three broad categories: professional and managerial work, intermediary occupations, and thirdly, manual work. So this transition, this change, is sometimes described in terms of a decline in the size of the working class in modern Britain because of the association between the working class and manual occupations. What are the implications for business of this change in the class structure and the occupational order? First of all, it's very important to notice that the class structure is, of course, rooted in the economy, whether we define it in terms of owners and workers, the kind of two-class model of the class structure, or whether we define it in terms of a range of occupational groups. So this is a very important way in which business activity shapes the social environment. The class structure is essentially rooted in the dynamic nature of the economy and the economic industrial change. Secondly, looking at the class structure raises important questions about employment relationships and attitudes to work, and how these vary between different occupational groups. Thirdly, the class structure raises issues about social mobility, or the chances of people from different occupational groups to move up the occupational order into professional or managerial jobs, and whether there is a kind of open occupational order or a relatively closed one. And finally, the class structure provides a very useful framework for understanding consumer behaviour because of different tastes or preferences, patterns of consumer demand among different occupational or class groups within society. So, summing up then, business activity takes place within a social and cultural context, and there's interaction between business and the social environment. A two-way influence. In this chapter, we've looked at three aspects of the social environment: demographic change, focusing upon the growth of the population and the ageing of the population. Secondly, we've looked at immigration and its cultural and economic implications. And thirdly, we've looked at class as an important feature of British society.